Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. If you missed the live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just Food is a nonprofit organization committed to helping people build community food projects. We know that people all over the city know that we need to change the food system, and they want to make that change, but so often people don't even know where to start. So we'd like to take the next half hour to introduce you to someone who started, taking her passion and skills to bring change. Hopefully her story will inspire you to create your own Just Food story. So I'm delighted to be here today on the radio with Leanne Brown. Leanne, are you there?
I am here.
Great.
Hello.
Leanne is an advocate for a better food system focused on a return to home cooking. As the final project of her master's degree in food studies at NYU, she created Good and Cheap, a beautiful cookbook of recipes designed for a $4 a day food stamp budget. And she has released a PDF that's of the book, and it's free online. She also has a Kickstarter campaign, which has a give one, get one model. And her goal is to motivate people to buy the cookbook, and she's done an amazing job doing that, so that she can distribute the book for free to low-income families in New York. So, Leanne, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Jackie, and I'm very pleased.
So, you describe yourself as an advocate for a better food system, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you became an advocate. How come that's the word that you feel like? How come that's the way that you're defining?
Well, I suppose because I think that I would say I'm a cookbook author. Or I'm an amateur cookbook author. It's not sort of a cookbook like most that you sort of see in the store. Obviously, I'm not traditionally published. Right now, my book is a free PDF. And in the Kickstarter project that I'm running, I've asked people to help fund the print run so that, and people can buy the book directly.
And I want to ask you all...
buying the book, they're also subsidizing print copies for people who aren't able to afford the book at full price and might benefit from that. And so while the book, of course, it's a cookbook, and I feel like I'm a lover of recipes and I'm a cook, I'm also someone who wants to make good change and wants to ensure that everyone of every income level can make good food and feel confident and happy and joyful in the food that they eat every day.
So let's talk a little bit more about the cookbook.
Sure.
First of all, do you have a culinary background? I mean, you said it's an amateur cookbook. So what made you feel like you had the resources and the wherewithal to write a cookbook? Do you have a culinary background?
I don't. I'm self-taught. I've been doing it for many, many years. But I'm a voracious reader of recipes, and I feel like recipes are sort of a second language to me. I love to cook. It's just something that I really have taken very naturally to. And, I sometimes wish I had a bit more specific culinary training. I feel like I've done okay for myself, and I'm able to sort of speak to the home cook, which is really what I'm trying to do, to just get more people to do what I do every day, which is just to cook from scratch in your own kitchen and have confidence. And I don't think that requires training.
So how did you develop this interest in and love for cooking?
Oh man, I think it's always been a part of me for as long as I can remember, since I was a kid. But I really began to just like adore being in the kitchen after I graduated from college with my undergraduate degree. I mean, during my degree, I cooked as well, but sort of not as much. Afterwards, when I sort of got my first real job, and I had a kitchen, I suddenly realized, wow, you know, I could actually make anything I want to in my kitchen. And so I started to do that. I realized, like, wow, I could just look up how to make a chocolate eclair if I wanted to, and I could make that. It was like this moment of, wow.
So it sounds like it's a very empowering. It sounds like it's a very empowering experience for you, being in your kitchen and being able to create whatever you want to create.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So when you thought about structuring this book, what were you thinking? Like, tell me about how you kind of conceived of this idea and how you wanted to structure it.
Sure. Okay, well, where should I go with this question? I think that's a great question. I'm trying to figure out how.
Basically, when you thought about your audience, kind of who were you trying to reach, and how did you want the book to reflect who you were trying to reach out to?
Okay, that's, yeah. So it kind of changed while I was developing it. Initially, you know, I was really trying to be all things to all people, and I realized throughout the process that I wasn't going to be able to do that. And so what I really wanted to focus on was to show that there's good, cheap food that could be sort of modern, interesting stuff, very vegetable and fruit-focused food that was maybe a little bit different than what we think of as sort of those traditional budget meals. But people always talk about rice and beans and sort of, you know, a lot of beans, a lot of certain sort of meat dishes, things like that that are sort of traditional, which are, you know, amazing meals and very important part of a healthy diet, but aren't necessarily sort of new information, weren't going to make people look and think about budget food in a different way. So what I wanted, so really my approach was to create very food that looked beautiful, but that had just happened to be inexpensive and really has a lot of fruits and vegetables in it, and has, you know, the flavor comes from the fruits and vegetables and the freshness.
So when you, I mean, being based in New York City when you did this project, again, this was a master's project, you know, when you look at the low-income communities of New York City, there's a lot of diversity, there's a lot of different types of cultural places that people are coming from in terms of their diet and food choices. How did you try to incorporate, given that you couldn't be all things to all people, how did you try to put cultural appropriateness into the book that you were creating?
Well, what I did was, so when I was sort of developing a scheme for how to decide what the prices of everything would be, what I did was I chose a neighborhood in New York, and so I chose Inwood, which is sort of a very diverse neighborhood, sort of, you know, has some low income that isn't sort of a... it's a very diverse neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was sort of a useful, it was a really good sort of snapshot of New York City. And what I did was I went to Inwood, and I went to all the different grocery stores, and I made a huge list of pantry items that I thought would be the basic foods that I'd be making all the recipes from. And so, and then I took prices of all those different foods at each of the different grocery stores, and then I did this sort of average cost of them. And so part of, while I developed that recipe, the pantry list in advance, when I was going around the store, I was also kind of inspired by some of the ingredients that I was seeing there. Mm-hmm. And tried to see, you know, what would be appropriate. Because the thing is, like, ultimately, while I say, you know, I want this to be a wonderful and frank scene, you know, what would be really cool would be to have a version of Good and Cheap for different regions of the country, for what's available. Because the thing is that you end up being so inspired by what are the local specialties, because certain things are cheaper in different parts of the country, and mm-hmm. or they're better quality, or there's, you know, there's a market for something, so the price comes down, and so those things can be incorporated more easily into diets in different parts of the country. Like, obviously, if I had developed this maybe in in California, the, there might be more avocados or things like that. There's a, you know, the produce there is a little bit more abundant and a little less expensive.
Right.
So you can do even more there.
Right. Absolutely. I love the idea of doing it on a regional basis, because I think you're right. Even a regional basis in New York City would be helpful, since you get so many different communities.
I mean, you could do a Brooklyn cook, so like Upper Manhattan cook. So yeah, I mean, it would be...
Yeah. So if anybody Googles good and cheap, at least when I put it into my Google search, your Kickstarter campaign was the first thing that popped up, which was kind of amazing.
Awesome.
Try that, because maybe that my smartphone knows me so well that it's like, she must be asking about food. But I don't know, that it was the first thing that popped up. And so if you look at this book and you flip through the book, it is beautiful. And then the price per serving is on the pictures of every beautiful food in the book. And the prices are kind of like staggering, because they're so low. So I know that you just kind of described like how you came up with your prices, but like that, they really were so low. Like how come you think like those prices, like why do you think, I mean, were these discount markets? Like what do you think made those prices come down so much?
No, they're not. I mean, there are ways that you can shop more with more savvy, you know, be more careful, do coupons, do certain techniques that can help you save money, which I didn't actually really use when developing it, because I wanted it to be something where it would be easy for people to achieve those prices. It wouldn't be a sort of, you know, if you do this and this and this and you buy at a special discount supermarket. I didn't want it to be like that. So the prices are actually fairly conservative. You know, the fact is, I think it's an interesting myth, but food is quite cheap when you cook from scratch and you use whole foods. It's one of those secrets that I think like every line cook in the city, you know, in this country knows this. Mm-hmm. We are so used to seeing food where, you know, there's already been a lot of either processing, even in the form of something as simple as, you know, a healthy food like a bag of spinach. A bag of pre-washed baby spinach costs something like $4. But if you buy just a bunch of spinach, often you can get that for half that price. So if you simply, you know, wash it at home and chop it up at home, you can save massive amounts of money. And that's just one sort of, that's just one example. Obviously, like, I think that's true across all kinds of things. And so you simply need to purchase things in their most raw state and add value to that at home through your cooking process. You can really get by on very little money.
And the other thing that you mentioned is that, like, seasonality plays a role. Some things are less expensive at certain times of year, and you can take advantage of that. How does your approach to cooking or your cookbook address that seasonal variation in product availability and price?
Right. Well, so I kind of tried to take an average of those things rather than take things while they were in season. But while I was developing the cookbook, I was actually part of a farm share program, which was really inspiring for me. So every week I would get a different variety of vegetables, which sort of forced me to come out of my comfort zone and sort of cook whatever was available. And I tried to develop some recipes for the cookbook that way. And I was seeing, you know, through the farm share, I was seeing firsthand, you know, I didn't pay a lot for it, but I was getting really a tremendous bounty. And as the summer wore on, I was getting more and more, and it was amazing what the amount of vegetables and fruits that you could get for a low price.
That's great. So we're going to have to take a short break right now for a commercial, and we'll be right back with Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the heritageradionetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jackie Berger, and you're listening to Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org, and we're here with Leanne Brown, and we're talking about her cookbook, Good and Cheap, which is available for free online, and you can also do a buy one, give one through her Kickstarter campaign. And I want to talk to you more about this Kickstarter, because I think, you know, in this movement, in this field, a lot of nonprofit organizations or individuals who are trying to launch projects look at Kickstarter as a possible way of addressing that need for funding. And Kickstarter is a unique model because you need to raise all of the money in order to get any of the money. And you set goals and then have blown past them. It's a hugely successful campaign. I think you sent me an email saying that you've now blown past $40,000. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, this morning I just checked. We're over $43,000
now. So, first of all, just because I know that some of the people who are listening are, you know, thinking about Kickstarter as a way of funding their own projects or their own work, what do you think has made your project so hugely successful? What advice do you have for people who are thinking about Kickstarter as a vehicle?
You know, it's a couple of things. First, I think I have a very appealing product, which is wonderful, and I'm so thrilled with the response to it. But you know what I think is useful advice truly for anyone doing anything is I used to work on political campaigns. Back in Canada, in my hometown of Edmonton, I worked on a couple of successful city council campaigns, and we ran them on a shoestring budget, and we just worked incredibly hard. And so with this Kickstarter campaign, what I did was I decided, you know, it's a campaign, and I was going to run it like I would a political campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than sort of creating, you know, a nice video and putting up the information and then just kind of waiting to see what happens, I've taken an extremely active role in every part of it. I have been working to speak to, you know, as much media as I possibly can, reaching out to as many different people as I possibly can. On the day that I launched, I sent a personal email to every single person that I know, letting them know that I was doing this. I wrote them all in advance, and I just sort of hit send on it at the end. But it's just sort of small things like that. It seems like they don't make a huge difference. You know, you might think, oh, I'll just send a big mass email to everyone I know. But when you send an individual one to everyone, it's a huge amount of work, but everybody is going to take the time to at least look at your campaign, and then often they're going to respond to you. And then they're going to share it with their friends if they're interested in it. It's just these sort of small techniques to take advantage of everyone has a network.
Mm-hmm.
And every person in your network has a network. And if you can just really find a way to galvanize that, to really inspire those people to work on your behalf, even just in a small way, like just tweeting about it, that can have an incredible effect. And that's, I think, really been my secret, is that I started out with just a bang with my network, who shared it excitedly. And I'm also lucky because I grew up in Edmonton, Alberta, in Canada, and I was a part of the student newspaper at the university there, and so all of my sort of very best friends are now 10 years later involved in journalism in Canada as well, so they have sort of been my advocates too.
That's fantastic.
So I have some natural advantages there.
So leveraging your personal network, leveraging the media, doing as much outreach as you possibly can, and you really mobilized a campaign, you know, as you said, it's not $40,000 from 41,000 donations. You've really mobilized a campaign of many, many, many smaller gifts.
Yes. Oh my goodness, it's crazy. I mean, I've had a couple of large donations, which is sort of amazing. But yeah, mostly it's just been a lot of people doing the buy one, give one, or the buy one, give two. Just hundreds and hundreds of them.
See, how many people have supported the campaign so far? Because I think that's a really impressive number.
Sure. Let me just take a look. It was over... It is 1,561 people.
That's great. So you went...
I know, it's amazing.
You hit viral status, which is really awesome. And then, but your mission, I mean, this isn't about you. This is about a project that you've created, and it's going to benefit the people who have donated, because they're going to get this beautiful book. And it's also going to benefit it's going to benefit families in New York City that are actually trying to make ends meet by feeding their families with the SNAP budget. So can you talk a little bit about that part of the vision and how that's going to happen?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. So initially when I started, you know, I didn't plan for as much success as we have had. I thought, you know, I hoped we'd make over 10,000 because that was sort of the minimum viable amount to do a print run. And I knew that, you know, the we could print so many more. If we went significantly over that because the marginal cost of each book becomes cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But I had thought, we will concentrate all our giving away of the books in New York City. But because we have had such a tremendous response all over the country, what I've done now is I've created an application form, which you can get on Kickstarter or you can get on my website, leannebrown.ca. And any nonprofit or charitable organization working with low-income families or people with limited incomes in any capacity, or, you know, people with disabilities, anything like that, can apply to receive some of the donated books. But there are a limited number of those. I think we're at about 1,700 right now, and I know that number's going to keep shooting up, but still there is a limited number of those. What I've been able to do because of the success of the campaign is I'm also making a further, I think we're at least 5,000 copies now that will be available to the same organizations for $4 a piece. So that's the sort of the organization to the low price, and that's basically the marginal cost.
That's amazing.
And
so when
and the only thing that I just want to put out there, just so we're totally clear, is I did, you know, initially I had hoped to be able to give everything away for free in New York, you know, no shipping costs, anything like that. But just in order for fairness, I'm allowing everyone to have it, and so everyone does have to pay for the shipping costs of the books, which in the United States with media mail is actually only about $20 for box of 25. So it's really quite reasonable, and I hope that that won't be a problem for anyone.
And so are you going to be, when do you expect to have the printed versions of the books in your in your hands?
Well, we're hoping for, or not hoping, we I am aiming for and plan to achieve September. The printing part should be pretty quick. But I do have to add 20 new recipes to the book because one of my rewards for my generous backers of $100, it was in limited quantity, was that I would develop a recipe with a person.
Aww.
And so there are some people out there who have these really wonderful ideas. I am so excited. There's this one fellow named Tony who's already shared with me. He wants to add Filipino adobo to the book because it sort of has a huge connection with his family and
how
with his
great.
Life. And I can't wait to develop these recipes with everyone and to tell these stories.
That is a really nice perk and a really nice to involve your supporters in the project. I really love that idea.
It's going to be fun.
So are you going to do a book tour? Or are you going to do, how are you going to promote the book once it's live or is it just going to be a continuation of this Kickstarter?
Well, with this project, honestly, I think all the books are going to be spoken for. Because we're self-publishing, we're only making a sort of limited number. We're going to be making, you know, the amount people have reserved and the amount that the nonprofits have ordered. We may, if we still clearly have interest here and there and just haven't got it nailed down, we may order more. But the fact is, I mean, I am doing this out of my little apartment, and it's just me and my partner, my husband. And really, much as I would love to be able to, I don't have a warehouse or anything like that.
Right.
For the CD forever. Those are sort of details that I hope to be able to have an answer to over the next few months. And I certainly hope to be able to make it sort of available in an ongoing way. But at the moment, you know, the Kickstarter is the only way to definitely make sure that you get one. If you want one, make sure that you reserve one.
And so when does that campaign end?
I should know, this is kind of embarrassing. It's like mid-July.
Okay, so there's still time to get in on this.
Three right now.
Wow.
We just went over two. It started last Wednesday. Let's say July 15th. This is embarrassing. I can't remember.
Okay, so no, that's fine. It's mid-July. People, if they so it, because yeah. there's no clear plan or idea about how it'll be, how you'll be able to continue this project after the Kickstarter campaign, people should definitely check out the Good and Cheap Kickstarter yeah. campaign before mid-July if they want to get copies and if they want to support your efforts to get more free copies and very low-cost copies into the hands of families that need them. So I just want to, we have a couple minutes left, and I feel like one thing I'd like to ask you about is the work that you've done, or your studies at NYU, because I know that this is a really popular program for people in this field. So can you talk a little bit about how your studies there have influenced your understanding of this field and the role that you want to take in it?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think this cookbook was the thesis project for my master's degree. Obviously, it's had a huge effect on the way that I think about my approach to, you know, being an advocate. And I think while I was studying, you know, I think part of it is I was so interested in the SNAP program, the food stamps program, in a lot of ways, I think, because I'm Canadian, and we don't have a similar program in Canada. And while, you know, I was familiar with it, it was still new to me in terms of sort of the details and really seeing what that meant in the day-to-day and reading about, you know, what hunger in America has meant, very different than how that plays out in Canada. There's a very different politics. And I just found myself really drawn to that throughout my degree with all the other things I was studying. I always kept coming back to the poor. And I found myself just feeling like, poor don't have as much of a voice in the food movement as they should. Really, they have barely any. The sort of concept, you know, the popular idea to vote with your fork is a really compelling idea, but the fact is that there are all kinds of people who do not have the choice to vote with their fork, and they shouldn't be left out of this very, very important conversation. And so I always wanted, during my degree, to do something for those who didn't have as much of a voice, and I really wanted to prove that great food, this beautiful food that we all talk about and obsess about, is possible for anyone, and that everyone deserves that.
So how do you think that after this project is over, what's next for you? Do you think you'll continue to work towards in that aspect of the field, or where do you think your path will take you next?
You know, I'm not sure. I really am enjoying the ride. My life still has changed so much over the last couple of weeks of this Kickstarter. I've been having all kinds of wonderful opportunities, and all kinds of people are interested in collaborating with me now. I hope to continue to work on these problems and get the word out there about cooking and how transformative and wonderful it can be and what a positive force it can be in the world. So, yes, that's what I hope to work on.
That's awesome. Well, Leanne, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me this morning. Again, the website is good and, well, you can Google Good and Cheap and Kickstarter, and if you put those three words in, it'll pop right up. You guys can see the cookbook and support this project. And Leanne, again, thank you so much for making the time to join us this morning.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
I also want to thank Liz Smith for engineering today's show. Hopefully, this story has helped to inspire you to create your own Just Food story. You can always find more archived episodes of Just Food Stories on heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And remember, if you have any questions for the program, you can call in live at 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you so much and see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Something you ain't heard before. We played on the street, we made a little coin, built a time machine and picked up